Good morning, church. Man, it is so good to be with you all this morning. I tell you what, we are really, really fortunate and blessed to be together. I know we've got a lot of folks out. Our teens are gone on their fall retreat. My son got to go. He was excited to be a chaperone. So, I mean, just doesn't get much better than being a chaperone, as we all know. So they'll be back here early this afternoon. It is also, not only, y'all may not know this, not only is Joe a new grandfather, but his wife Shannon is a grandmother. Y'all may not know that. Y'all give Shannon a big hand. Also, if you want to see pictures, that's where you go. Shannon has got one or two, and she would be happy to share those with you all. It's also a big weekend coming up Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday. So today is the 9th. On the 11th is Veterans Day, and we have so many amazing veterans. If you are a veteran with us this morning, just stand up, whether you're active or retired or former, stand up. Y'all give them a hand. So thankful. So thankful for those men and women, and we are glad to be able to honor you all for your time of service and your lives that you have that laid down and laid on the line. Now, I'm not a big advocate, if you know me, I'm not a big advocate of the good old days. People talk about the good old days as if everything was always perfect. A friend of mine, his grandmother was much older, and he said that his grandmother complained one time. She said, people always talk about the good old days. She said, you know, we could go out and leave our house unlocked, didn't ever have to worry about anything. She said to her grandson, she said, you know why we could do that? Because we didn't have anything worth stealing. That's why we could leave our house unlocked. The good old days weren't as good as we make them out to be. So I'm not an advocate of the good old days, but there are things that I miss. There are times when, you know, I long for that sense of freedom, you know, rather than every time I leave my car in the parking lot, you know, I try to make sure it's locked up and my house is locked up and all that, and they have to have an alarm system on those things. And I long for the days when kids could go out and just go around the block and go out and play, and we didn't worry about that the same way, and we could send them out to ride the trails through the woods is what I did as a kid, and they didn't have to give it back until a certain time for dinner or lunch, whatever it might be. And parents, we didn't think about as much the dangers that were out there. And the days when school fights, you know, when you had a school argument, they ended with double dog dares instead of, you know, knives or pistols or whatever it may be. And you didn't have online social media bullying. I miss the times before all that. There was a sense of peace and security. Whether it was true or false, we felt safer, at least in former times. So when did that change? When did it change from a greater sense of security and safety to feeling unsettled or unsafe? So for some people, it all happened on September 11th, 2001. That's when, for some people, that's when your world broke, when the towers fell, when the Pentagon was hit. We felt threatened. We felt violated. We felt exposed, and suddenly there was a threat of terrorism everywhere. I mean, you know, you were worried about it in Manchester, and people were worried about it where we were in West Kentucky at the time, and people were worried about it in Texas. I mean, the people I grew up with, they were worried about it there. We were worried, everybody, there were terrorists everywhere, right? Just never felt safe. For some people, the world broke in 2020. When there were all the lockdowns and all the businesses and all the services shut down, and there were wildfires that swept over the majority of Australia, and there were the protests and the social unrest, and the whole world just felt like it was unstable, like we were going through some time of upheaval, like it was never going to be fixed again. For some people, the world broke on November 22nd, 1963. If you're older, you may remember, you know, when this young and promising U.S. president was killed in front of crowds of adoring supporters, and the whole world just turned upside down. It just felt like something had gone so drastically wrong that things would never be the same again. So regardless of what your date is, regardless of the point that you point back to, we all acknowledge that we live in the aftermath, right? We live in the time where school shootings and church shootings and cyber criminals and identity theft and any one of a number of events that leave us feeling never safe, whether at home or at school or at church. And all that to say this, we live in a broken and sin-filled world. That is our world. It's not just Manchester or Coffee County or Tennessee or the United States. We live, our whole world is broken and sin-filled. And so we as Christians are challenged to live as people of faith in that sort of world. That's the circumstances. How do we live with faith in that world? What does it look like for us to do that? So today, as we're continuing our study through the Gospel of Mark, Mark chapter 13 gives us a glimpse of what life in a broken world is like. How do we respond in the face of a world that seems to be falling apart around us? So I would encourage you, if you have a chance this week, to go and just read the full chapter of Mark chapter 13. We don't have time to do it this morning, but it's an intriguing chapter, and I'm just going to try to sum it up for us in a way that we can understand and sort of wrap our minds around in the time that we have together this morning. It starts off this way. As Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." "You see all these great buildings," replied Jesus. "Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." And as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew, they asked him privately, "Tell us when these things happen, and what will be the sign that they're all about to be fulfilled?" Now, the temple that they're talking about, when he says they were coming to the temple, this is the temple, this was a not the temple of Solomon. That temple was destroyed. It was rebuilt when some of those exiles came back out of Babylonian captivity. But the temple that they're talking about was this temple expansion project. King Herod, yes, that King Herod, was adding on to the temple. He was making the temple bigger and grander and better than anything anyone had ever built, including Solomon's temple. So it was begun by Herod in years before, and it's still 30 years from being completed. It was enormous. It took decades to get done. But already you could see the size and the scope and the beauty and the grandeur, and everybody was amazed by this project. The walls of this temple complex were ornate, and they were massive. I mean, just massive. They soared like 164 feet into the air. That's a big wall. 164 feet into the air. It was made of blocks of stone that weighed up to 400 tons. That's how big some of those blocks were. So this, when we say this is a big expansion project, it was enormous. It would be enormous today. If you were to build this today in Nashville, people would be amazed. I mean, it was huge, right? There was nothing. It wasn't just that the disciples were amazed by it, because they're a bunch of rednecks who've never been anywhere and seen anything. It was that everybody was amazed at this. There was nothing like it anywhere else in their world. Nothing like it. So everyone is impressed by this. Everyone is, except for Jesus. Jesus is a lot more fixated on the people than the buildings. Now, we see people all the time, big people, small people, young people, old people, rich people, poor people. We see people all the time, so people don't impress us. But Jesus is much more fixated on the people. He's much more fixated on the worship that goes on inside the temple than the extravagant shell that's surrounding it. And so because Jesus is doing that, why? I mean, Jesus, there's people everywhere. There's worship all the time. What? This is a big, special building. Why aren't you so impressed by this building? And it's because Jesus knows. Jesus is not impressed by the building because Jesus knows. He knows that this big, beautiful building, the visible sign of God's presence with Israel, he knows that this building, as grand and as big and as strong as it is, this building's not long for this world. And so Jesus tells them, almost flippantly, that the temple's going to be destroyed, and the time's going to come when not one stone is left on top of another. Jesus' words, it would be as shocking as you and I today taking a tour of Washington, D.C., and we come to the U.S. Capitol, which, if you've never seen it, it's impressive. It's this, you know, big edifice. And if someone were to tell you that the Capitol is going to be torn down, there's not going to be one stone standing on top of another. I mean, we're like, what has happened if that's going to be the case? I mean, that sounds like apocalyptic stuff. Is it a bomb or an earthquake or what is happening if there's not one stone left on top of another from the Capitol or the White House or what have you? So Jesus tells them that this temple is going to be destroyed, that their world, the disciples, for them, their world as they knew it was going to come to an end. Just as at some point our world is going to come to an end with world wars and Great Depression and JFK assassination, 9/11, just as it happens over and over and over again, our world sort of comes crashing to an end. The temple was going to be torn down in AD 70. Assuming Jesus is around 30 to 33 years old here, that means another 35 to 40 years. This temple was going to be completed in another 30 years, lasts for about 10, and then be destroyed. I mean, I've got britches in my closet that are older than that. Right? So this thing that they're fascinated with that's so big and impressive, it's not going to be even 10 years of full completion. So the disciples, they're going to be scrambling because this building is supposed to last forever. It's enormous. It's impressive. It's supposed to last forever. So they're going to be scrambling like, what has happened that this temple is gone? So they ask the most natural question in the world. When is this going to happen? Right? When is this temple going to be torn down? When is it going to be destroyed? When is the nation's identity going to be stripped away? Because we are the people of the temple. So if the temple is gone, where is God? So when is all this going to happen? When is our world going to fall apart? That's what they're asking Jesus. And Jesus answered their question, and again, we're not going to go all through it, we just don't have the time, but Jesus' answer left them, and has really, truly left believers since then, sort of scratching our heads. We've disagreed about what exactly Jesus was saying. Some of it seems to be talking specifically about the destruction of the temple. Some of it seems to be talking about maybe not just the destruction of the temple, maybe the end of the world and Jesus' second coming, the end of time, so to speak. He talks about how there's going to be wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines, and that believers are going to be persecuted and martyred and put on trial for their faith, and it's going to get so bad that some people are going to abandon everything. They're just going to run out of their house, run out of the city, and go and live out in the hills. And they're just going to try to hide in order to survive. And at the same time, there's going to be some people who are claiming to speak in Jesus' name who do not have other believers' best interests at heart. All of this is going to be going on. Does any of this sound familiar? And if you're watching at home or on TV or wherever electronically, there are a lot of other ministers and churches that at this point would be pointing out how all of the events in our timeline seem to be lining up with this. Just like every other Christian in the history of Christianity, we can find events to fit this. So it must be us right here right now. That's what seems to happen. It has largely been the story of the world for 2,000 years. These prophecies are pretty vague. Do you remember the time when there was no wars going on the earth? You remember that time? Me neither. Because it hasn't happened in any of your lifetimes. You remember that time there was no earthquakes? Me neither. Because earthquakes have been going on as well before we were alive. Do you remember the time there was no famines? Me neither. Because there hasn't been a time there hasn't been famines in all of our lifetimes. We've had these prophecies. You could have said them about people 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago, or us today. They seem sort of vague. So maybe what Jesus is saying isn't meant to be taken the way that we've taken it. This has been the story. It's been told at different times to different people in different ways, applying to different events throughout Christian history. And the one thing that you can know for certain is if someone tells you they have figured out the math and they know when the world is coming to an end, you can know that person is delusional. I'm not going to say they have bad intentions. They might. But I'm going to tell you that they don't know what they're talking about. Because Jesus himself says, I don't know when I'm coming back. So if Jesus doesn't know when he's coming back, I'm pretty sure Joe from Missouri doesn't have it all figured out on a scratch pad. Right? So the reason we've been scratching our heads is because, like the disciples in this story, we've become so fixated on the signs that we missed Jesus' message. Jesus was less focused on the signs and more concerned about giving us the message. And when we think about this passage and we think about other passages like it from the Gospel of Matthew or the Gospel of Luke, when we think about those other passages, we're just trying to find the signs so we can know what's going on in the world. And Jesus was so vague in the signs, he thought we would pay attention to what he's saying. But we miss it. And Jesus' message was really simple, and it was really, really important. So this is Jesus' message. I'm just going to give it to you in a nutshell. Jesus' message is this, that the world is broken, but that he's still going to be with us. That is the message of Mark 13. It's not about you figuring out the dates and the times for Jesus' second coming or anybody else. It's about Jesus acknowledging that our world is really broken. Famine, broken. A war, broken. Disease, broken. Earthquake, tsunami, broken. Our world is so broken that people die on massive scales all the time, and we hardly even notice if it isn't in our part of the world. It happens all the time, and Jesus says, even though these things are happening all the time, I'm still with you. Don't worry about what you're going to say when you're put on trial for your faith, because it's going to happen to some of you. When you are put on trial for your faith, don't worry about what you're going to say, because I'm going to be there, and the Holy Spirit is going to lead you what to say. Don't get caught up in all the political turmoil of this world. You look at your family. Look at your husband or your wife or your parents or your kids or the people who are around you. You look after your community. Don't worry about all that stuff. Don't get caught up in the trap of trying to figure out when the world is coming to an end. No one knows when the world's coming to an end. You focused on what I've called you to do here and now. That's all you need to know. That is the message of Mark chapter 13. That our world is falling apart, that it's splitting at the seams, and the reason it's doing that is because there's a new kingdom being born. A kingdom not of flesh and blood and stone on stone, a kingdom that isn't purchased at the point of a sword. A king who is going to reign not in fear and in tyranny, but in love and in grace. This whole new world is being born. And all of the dangers that shake its very foundations cannot threaten your life in Christ one whit. That's what Jesus is saying. So in verses 26 and 27, he says, at that time, people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory, and he will send his angels to gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven. Of the heavens. In other words, there is not going to be a single believer, nobody, whether they live in Manchester or New York City or Tokyo, there's not going to be a single believer, whether they're in 2025 or 1908 or whether they were in the 500s in some ancient Near Eastern country and never made those contacts. You're never going to see a single believer who is overlooked. That is our confidence. That is what Jesus is saying. He says, I know exactly what I'm doing, so don't get caught up in all this other stuff. And all we have to focus on is keeping our eyes on him. Pay attention. Don't fall asleep. And don't give up hope. So many years ago, the actor Charlton Heston had to learn how to drive a chariot. Y'all remember this movie? Raise your hand if you remember this movie. All right, kids, look around at the old people. All right. Charlton Heston had to learn how to drive a chariot for this. This is before CGI. You could do all this stuff safely in a studio, right? He had to learn to drive this chariot with four horses for his part in the movie Ben-Hur. Now, he explained to an interviewer that he had to, like, take actual chariot lessons. I don't know where you get chariot lessons, but he had to take them. And he told the director, he got better at it. He's like, look, I think I can drive the chariot all right, but I'm not sure I can actually win the race. And the director responded and said, you just stay in the race. I'll make sure you win. Brothers and sisters, that's the message this morning from Jesus Christ. You're not going to get so good at this thing that you're going to go out there and win the race. You just stay in the race. Let God take care of the winning. Don't worry about the time. It's going to finish right on time. Don't worry about the events. Our world is broken. We just keep our eyes on the prize. And this morning, if you are ready for a faith that is unflappable in the face of a broken world, if you're ready to have your life rooted in Jesus Christ, in the one sure foundation in a world that is topsy-turvy, if you're ready for that safety and security of knowing you are his and his forever in the family of God, won't you come now and we stand and as we sing.